We are back, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us here at Red Ice TV. I'm Henrik, and this is March. It is, rather, I should say, March 27th, 2019. Thank you to everyone joining us out there. Good to have you all with us. I hope you're having a wonderful day. We're having a very interesting week here so far, to say the least. A lot of things are happening. The EU article, the controversial Article 13 and 11 have passed. We also, of course, have Smollett walking free, Jussie Smollett walking free. Without any charges. We've had the Russia collusion narrative completely collapsing after the Mueller report has been released. And of course, there's a lot of other things going on as well. And today we have with us Orwell N. Good. You might know him from Twitter, of course, very active there. A lot of good stories, posting a lot of good stuff to kind of help us break down some of the current news and some of the things that's been happening this and, I guess, to a certain extent, last week as well. So thank you, Orwell N. Good, for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Henrik.
Excellent. So let's dive into some of this, and maybe we'll get, maybe I'll ask you a little bit later, kind of about, you know, your activism in terms of Twitter and stuff like that later. But I wanted to begin diving into some of the news, and I guess appropriately to start in the right order of this and talk about the big breaking news in terms of the mainstream media, how the narrative has collapsed after the Mueller investigation, the report, and just the whole collusion narrative. And I wanted to get your take on this because, again, one good thing that's come out of all of this is that the mainstream media continues to discredit itself by pushing these ridiculous conspiracy theories. And I think most of us have said for 2 years, including Trump, that, listen, there's nothing to it. It's just, it's a big nothing burger. And now we've been handed this. Are you surprised?
I'm not surprised at all. We've been saying this ever since they started coming up with these allegations, what, 2.5 years ago, was it now? And it's just distraction. I mean, the media doesn't have much to offer the average sort of American voter anymore. So they just have to kind of get everyone up into a tizzy over these little things. And it's just, it's plain obvious from the onset that this was just going to be one big, giant, whopping nothing burger. And, you know, we've kind of been vindicated after all these accusations of Russian bots and all these kind of names thrown at our way to see this happen. And, of course, the media's response to this was just pretty much textbook from the media. A lot of it is sort of a shirking of guilt and saying that, well, you know, us journalists, we work tirelessly to try to bring you the truth. Even though we condemned Trump for being a Russian agent for all this time, well, when it came out that there was no evidence against him, it's not our fault. We're just doing our jobs. You know, it's just so typical of the media. And you're absolutely right. We don't really have to do much to show that the media wears no clothes anymore. They do a great job for us by just publishing their stories on a daily basis.
Exactly. CNN's Brian Stelter said on the Mueller coverage, the press is just following a trail that Trump created. It's like, I know he didn't create that. I mean, he did that one video. Ramsey Paul, I think, tied it back to that too. He did a speech and this turned into a video that was released online where he was talking about, hey, Russia, if you're listening, please kind of release the emails, hack more stuff, right? And that's kind of it was a joke, right? He's being facetious, but the media don't take nuance very well. They can't really break down trolling or joking, and they just kind of pick up on it. Whatever you say is what you say, right?
Exactly. They can't detect irony at all. I think it's kind of lost them. Maybe they take themselves way too seriously, and maybe they overvalue the role that they have in, quote unquote, informing people. So that's probably why they took it at face value rather than saying, well, he's obviously being facetious here. He's obviously just trying to mock us. But I think that there's such narcissists in the media that they just cannot interpret when people are making a joke at their expense.
I know, it's crazy. Glenn Greenwald tweeted this short 2-minute video, for those of you in the media, pitifully insisting that no media reckoning is needed and journalists perform beautifully, soberly, and responsibly throughout this whole saga. Let's check this video out here.
Breaking news.
A bombshell.
Today is a turning point. Today was historically bad for President Trump.
Today was a turning point.
A turning point.
We're at a turning point here.
The beginning of the end for the Trump presidency.
We have another bombshell.
Mike Pence might have to assume the office of the presidency.
Rumblings of the word impeachment.
Breaking news.
Another bombshell out of the White House.
I believe this is the beginning of the end.
I do too.
It's really the beginning of the end.
He may be feeling the walls closing in on him.
All the walls closing in on him.
The walls closing in on him.
Breaking news, a new bombshell.
One astrologer says this means the beginning of the end for President Donald Trump.
Trump will resign.
Trump is going to resign.
Is this the tipping point?
I know we've said it,
over and over.
You think this is a tipping point?
And over and over.
This is a tipping point.
And over and over.
Breaking news, President Trump off the rails.
There's a beginning of the end today.
The beginning of the end.
Breaking news tonight, new bombshell.
This is the beginning, not the end.
The beginning of the end.
The walls are closing in.
The walls closing in.
The walls closing in.
Breaking overnight bombshell.
This is a very dramatic day, and I think it might be near a tipping point. Do you think this is a tipping point?
December 1st, 2017, you can mark it down. This is the day that everything changed.
All right, I think we've heard enough. That continues for like another 1.5 minute or so. It's nauseating, but it's kind of funny in a way, isn't it?
Yeah, it's funny how it's just so scripted and how they're all just in unison wishing for Trump to go down. It's almost as if the mainstream media is just glorified political activism with a better salary.
Yeah, exactly. Avenatti, of course, he was arrested, wasn't he?
Who, sorry?
Avenatti, the lawyer, creepy porn lawyer. I think he was arrested, yeah. Wasn't he?
Yeah, he was trying to, he was done for trying to extort Nike, I believe.
That's right, exactly, that's right. He said he had some dirt on them. They had been bribes within like college basketball or something. And he approached their legal team and demanded like, I don't know how many millions of dollars. And of course, they went to the authorities and he got arrested. So we'll see how that pans out. But it's interesting, though, because I mean, I think Trump, what he's done, I think primarily his helping to discredit the media industrial complex has been the most beautiful thing he's done. I'm certainly not happy with him, frankly, on a lot of other issues. I think he's let a lot of people down. He hasn't really come through when it comes to the internet censorship and how his base is being shadow banned and blocked and all that kind of stuff. Right. So there's a lot of criticism to have. But I think that this has vindicated him, and it also has helped to create a kind of a diversion from, what do we call this? Other forces meddling behind the scenes who might have ties or their hooks in Trump. I don't know. How do you view this?
Yeah, I completely agree with you. With some things, he has been a bit of a disappointment. And recently, when he's been hammering on about the unemployment rates of certain groups or how well the stock market's doing, I don't think that resonates with the average voter. And that's kind of left an opening. And you've probably seen the memes on social media for Yang Gang. And Yang is touching upon those things for the disaffected white working and lower middle class voters, which I think is very important. And it's a great opportunity for that to come about. And even if he doesn't get the nomination, those subjects are going to be touched upon, and they're going to apply pressure onto Trump or whoever's going to lead in 2020 to kind of hammer down those issues, because they really are a concern. And again, you're absolutely right. Trump, the best thing he's done is to kind of catalyze this this discrediting of the media. And most people are seeing it. And I think with the whole Jussie Smollett incident, a lot of kind of I wouldn't even say politically lying. I think maybe apolitical people see this happening and realize that there is this blood libel against white people in general. And the media has this seething anti-white hatred. And they're just willing to go with any narrative to kind of give themselves any validity, because they've lost it all. They've absolutely lost it all. They lost a lot of validity in trying to smear Trump on the run-up to the 2016 election campaign and thereafter. And now they're just running with these things. They're kind of like headless chickens. They almost have no purpose but to try to discredit Trump, to discredit whatever's not part of the sort of the mainstream left anymore.
Yeah, exactly. And Smollett, as you said, very important news in terms of how the prosecutors they just dropped no indictment, no charges. For a while, they were talking about that he was at very least going to pay the fees, right? The resources that the cops in Chicago had spent on this case, because it was just astronomical. Remember how much attention this got and how much focus? And I don't know what happened with that, but we had this one story which was interesting, talking about the dark money, which led back to George Soros. By the way, it's kind of tiresome talking about this guy, but the fact is he has his fingers in a lot of pies, whether we want to or not. But there's dark money behind Kim Fox's the state attorney campaign that actually resulted in dropping Jussie Smollett's charges. So it's all, it seems to me that it's a bigger fish behind the scenes. I know that people have speculated that both Kamala Harris and Cory Booker, which was involved in passing this anti-lynching bill, that the Smollett case showed up at a very convenient time, and the fact that he had a noose around his neck, well, this didn't happen, but that's what he said, right? And so that there was this whole machine kind of behind him, And now they dropped the trail because it led to too many powerful people. I don't know. Maybe that's just a conspiracy theory. What do you think?
Well, they apparently they passed a gag order to restrict any speech about the investigation within Chicago PD. So it's all very, very weird. And of course, you have seen pictures on social media circulating which have got Jussie Smollett with the Obamas. But, you know, he's a relatively important entertainment figurehead. I don't really watch much TV, so that's just my interpretation of it. So, and we know Chicago has been a very corrupt city for a very long time. There's been a lot of left-wing terrorist groups who have been traced back to Chicago, and a lot of left-wing activism.
That's right.
You know, the most important one being Saul Alinsky, and then you know, the Obama administration, and
Rahm Emanuel, the mayor.
Yeah, but he, funnily enough, came out and denounced Jussie Smollett. Which
I think he had to save skin, right?
yeah, just to save face. Yeah. So you know, it's all political, and I don't really know how it's going to proceed from here. Apparently, there was some talk of Jussie Smollett considering charges against Chicago PD, but it's again, it's just a cover up. It's just to save face, like what Rahm Emanuel did, even though he may not feel that way.
Yeah, exactly. But it's a case, I think, which is indicative of the times, right? Where you can basically just have any accusations without any evidence and any proof being plastered all over the national and ultimately international media, because it feeds into the narrative that the mainstream, the neoliberal world order it wants to project, which is white people are bad ultimately, and it's of course targeting, you know, MAGA supporters and Trump people and stuff like this. Also, underneath that as a second layer, but it was so convenient that the media just couldn't let it go. And now, of course, we've handed this kind of victory, I guess, for lack of a better term, showing that we cannot trust victims just because they come out and say so, but that something happened to them. But this is what happens, right?
Yeah, and the same applies with Kavanaugh's appointment to the Supreme Court as well. It's this whole thing that we've kind of... You've seen articles from places like Salon and Slate talk about post-truth. And there was this article from Slate a couple of years ago which talked about prioritizing emotions over facts. And we were kind of descending in this world, oh, it was their truth. This is the way they experienced it. Therefore, that's the way it went down. When, of course, we know it's not the truth. And, you know, I think as we descend further down into this neoliberal world that our great leaders, our wise and great overseeing leaders are trying to create for us, we're going to start seeing more of this kind of stuff. We're going to start seeing more of this. It's probably more misdirection than anything, because this year so far we've had the Covington Catholic boys incident too, which was just this huge, just the way that the media just ran with a narrative without evaluating all the facts first, and then now Jussie Smollett, and then we're going to start seeing more and more of these stories come to light as time progresses. And I think it's just a way to keep the news readers and the population in general just distracted on these issues, and it kind of gives a reason for the mainstream media to keep doing what they're doing. And they do it with impunity, even though their credibility is through the floor.
Yeah, that's true. So there's a lot of these cases that we've been, well, I guess, given, handed, for the lack of a better term, that proves our point. And the question is, I think the media has always been like this, but we live in a different era and a different time where information is widely more accessible. Everyone has a video camera at demand, you know, in their pocket, pretty much. They can record stuff and we can break it down and kind of realize that there's much more to the story than that we're trying to push. So the question is, have journalistic standards just completely fallen off the edge, or is this always how they've operated?
I think it's always how they've operated. We're just lucky to have alternative media and social media to kind of dismantle the narratives that they try to construct for us. Like, you know, Walter Duranty on his reporting on the Soviet Union, and he was a prize winner for it, even though he just spread complete misinformation about what was happening. And they haven't pulled it off him yet either. They haven't posthumously stripped him of that award. And I think this is one of the reasons why we see more of these censorious encroachments on freedom of speech, and you see all these policies directed against hate speech. Obviously, hate speech is nebulously defined on purpose, because it just gives them just free rein to censor and clamp down on whatever they don't like. And as we saw recently with the passage of Article 13 and Article 11, it just gives more power to major corporations, the legacy media, and it protects the powers that be, these neoliberal overlords, to kind of be a bit over-exaggerative. But I think that this is the only reason why they have to clamp down on it. And it's just all... Sorry, go ahead.
No, I just want to say, what do you think... I mean, no one really knows what Article 13 and 11 is going to look like in terms of the technology that platforms must implement to abide by these new rules and laws. But it's clear that it's going to hit the alternative media the hardest, because we basically, the show up to this point that you and I have done here, I would not be able to do, at least in Europe, or I could maybe upload it to YouTube, but it... either YouTube would ban it, or they would just block it in Europe. I mean, again, no one knows, right? But I wouldn't be able to show headlines. We wouldn't be able to play a clip and show, hey, this news source is reporting on this. They're talking about this. Even on our site, if I link to a different source for something, I have to pay like a link tax. I mean, it's total absurdity. But it is clear to me that it is designed to limit the ability for alternative and up-and-coming smaller media companies to kind of, you know, disseminate information and spread a different perspective. That's what I see, in a way, the outcome of this.
Yeah, and it's like killing two birds with one stone as well. So on the one hand, it severely cripples the scope and reach of alternative media sources. And at the same time, it kind of gives these sort of Eurocrats free rein to just take off anything they don't like of social media. So if you say, well, actually, I don't think that's a good idea to import hundreds of thousands of people from Africa and the Middle East every year to European countries, well, your ideas could get taken off. And as we saw in the Christchurch shooting, I believe, I can't remember if he was Australian or if he was a New Zealander, but he was banned from using the internet after, I can't remember exactly what he did. He either shared the footage of the shooting, or he said something which wasn't very polite about the shooting. But just, they have the ability to kind of unperson you, which is, it's pretty frightening. And we have seen how the mainstream media has maligned people who are against mass immigration, people like Pegida, whose views, say, 50 years ago would have been pretty mainstream. And just now, anybody who's remotely against mass immigration is automatically termed far right. There isn't any room for debate. It's just far right, these far right groups. And even people like UKIP get termed far right, and their opinions are, just a fraction to the right of, say, neoliberalism. But that's the kind of world we're descending into. And it's a real shame, because how are you going to be able to notify the people as to what's happening in your neighborhoods?
That's just it, right? It's control of the narrative, total control. And I think, you know, it's funny too, because I remember in the early days of the internet, we can reminisce and think back of the Wild West of the web, right? When we could all post pretty much what we wanted, we could say whatever we wanted. I think people will look back at that, unfortunately, in amazement and like, wow, can you believe that? You could do whatever you wanted basically online. But it's clear that they have to control that narrative, and they have to shut down alternative voices, because they're just, it has led to the dismantling of the credibility of the mainstream media and the whole kind of, yeah, neoliberal media, political complex, whatever you want to call it, the establishment pretty much that has pushed this one view in this one way. They have lost so much control. And in the beginning, you know, we said, whoa, they didn't even know what they expected with the internet. But the sad reality now is that most of the things are online. And if they can control this with filters or algorithms or artificial intelligence or something like that, they could basically scrub anything from, including the history books or the record. As you say, we talk about non-personing. They could literally take individuals and scrub them from the digital record. And these days, no one would go to a library to find the books, right? So it's an even scarier scenario of what has developed with the aid of the internet, I think, in the long run, anyway.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. I mean, for example, they take down people like Jordan Peterson's book, they've taken down Ruth Shvi's book, they've taken down other dissident authors' books as well. I personally, I don't tend to read any history books that were written after 1945. That's when I think that political correctness really started to get a stranglehold over the narrative in academia. And, you know, they are trying to rewrite history. Major universities are taking down busts and portraits of white thinkers, white figureheads, white people. I saw an old article from the Daily Telegraph, which I tweeted out yesterday, where they wanted to remove Plato, Kant, and Aristotle from philosophy courses because of their being white. So you have these movements to, quote unquote, decolonize science as well. And you're right, they're just going to try to rewrite history. And it's like that's Orwellian phrase. I'm going to paraphrase it because I can't remember it. Whoever controls the past controls the future. And I think that they're doing this very, very well by trying to write you out of the script of your own history.
Yeah, and then they say those who control the present controls the history or the past as well, right? Because they can rewrite it or they can dictate what goes. I almost get tired of, well, I mean, talking about Orwell, your username is Orwell on Twitter for a reason, I would assume. But it is, if nothing else, it's the most Orwellian thing that we've ever seen historically in terms of controlling and regulating and changing and updating information and history.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't think there's anything quite like this on such a wide scale. I mean, most people were just kept in the dark about things in the past. But now that we have all this information at our fingertips, which a lot of people don't even bother using anyway, they don't know how lucky they are. But I think those who are really appreciative are going to be hit the hardest by all these censorious measures that they're going to try to impose. And it's going to get worse and worse and worse. We all knew that this was going to come eventually. We just didn't think it would come so quickly.
Very quickly, yep. And they never let a opportunity go to waste, as they say. And that includes mass shootings. It includes staged hate hoax crimes, and they keep pushing forward on these issues, regardless over the fact that not all of it is true, and it's a managed narrative in some cases.
Indeed, and just look how quickly both the media and the authorities act on certain things. For example, when it came to the whole Jussie Smollett incident, the fact that it just blew out of proportion so quickly, that was the first giveaway. It's almost as if the media were privy to what was going to happen before it happened.
Yeah, it was like ready to go. You're right. Absolutely true. And there's so many angles here we need to discuss, and we'll get to... I want to dive a little bit deeper into Article 13 and some of the stuff behind that, of why that happened, because it's kind of interesting. But Facebook, as I was a breaking story here just an hour or so ago, that in the wake of Christchurch, Facebook is going to ban what they term, and I would like a definition of this too, white nationalism and separatism. And I'm sure it's only white separatism too, by the way. It's not any other version of that. Here's another story. Facebook will block white nationalists, white separatist posts. Does that mean whole pages will be taken down? Is it just individual posts? If someone says, for example, I don't think open borders is good, or I don't like mass immigration, is that a white separatist post? What's the definition of this?
Well, yeah, they're deliberately sort of just ill-defined, so they can ban whoever they don't like off social media. And just to kind of go back to what we're saying about Article 13, we know that Facebook has been colluding with foreign governments, with European governments, into trying to take down hate speech, so so-called hate speech. I remember, this is just an observation, about 3 years ago, there used to be far more news about migrant crimes, for example, and that mass molestation in Cologne and Hamburg in 2016 as well, for New Year's Eve celebrations. There used to be far more information back then, but Germany has been one of the countries that's been working closely with Facebook into trying to take down this hate speech. Now, I don't see very much information coming out of Germany in regards to how well their sort of forced multiculturalism has been going. And that makes me feel very, very suspicious about what's happening. And of course, we know that these neoliberal governments are trying to stifle the flow of information, deliberately so. It's to cement their position of power, because if more people knew what was going on, they'd get voted out in the next election. And of course, there would be far more marches against them. I think people would be far less apathetic towards them if people actually had the full story. And it's by design. It's absolutely by design. And you can see the same thing happening in America as well, where you have a lot of white liberals in particular that who don't mind America becoming a minority white country in years to come, as demographers predict it to be. But it's usually because they don't have any interaction with the policies that they promote.
Right.
They're the ones who are kind of living in those gated communities or living in these very white places such as Maine or Connecticut and so on and so forth.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, this article is important from this is back in 2015 when Merkel was meeting with the Zuck and, of course, caught over a hot mic talking about they need to regulate anti-immigrant posts and stuff like that. And I mean, on one end, I think it's so that this vehemently anti-white agenda and replacement agenda could move forward. I think even in the wake of Christchurch, I think that they are eventually going to criminalize talking about the reality of replacement migration or population replacement or the great replacement, as of course the Shooter's Manifesto was titled, which is based on Renaud Camus' kind of thesis. The French identitarian movement kind of picked up on this too, but he was basically the premise is simple. It was saying, you have one people, and then in a generation or two, you have another group there, another people in its place, right? That's replacement, and that's what we observably can see happening in the West. But for this agenda to really go through without people speaking up against it, they can't have people noticing this, right, or pointing it out and saying, "Hey, what's going on here?" So they're willing, I think, to risk the entire credibility of the establishment to try to continue to enforce this policy. What do you think about this?
No, I completely agree with you. And I think they will become far more sort of extreme in what they censor, what they take off their websites. For example, if you were to post the before and after image of, say, Birmingham, which used to be it's still an industrial city, major city in the UK, And now it's got a very large Muslim population. 5% of people who live in Birmingham don't even speak any English. And that's how quickly it's changed. But if you take a picture of people going off to fight against the Nazis in the early 40s, you just see all these working class white British men preparing to make the ultimate sacrifice for their countries. And then now you have literally tens of thousands of Muslims praying in their parks. There was one last year where around 140,000 Muslims turned up to pray in the park in Birmingham. You tell people three generations ago that that's going to be the end result of your country, and they wouldn't have crossed the English Channel. They would have just stayed at home and have a cup of tea.
Well, that's a good point, you know, and they say, I'm trying to find that video here too. Here's one from 2018. Let me pull that up here and we can talk. Jesus, we can talk about that while we or show that while we talk about this. But yeah, it's observable, it's empirical, it's there, it's happening, and yet they continue to say that it's a conspiracy theory, right? It's to gaslight us into thinking that it's not really happening. They're trying to Jedi mind trick us into just kind of going along and saying that it's all fine, you know, our house is on fire and we're being replaced. But if you point it out and if you notice this, then you're the problem, not the actual consequences of this mass migration policy.
Indeed, indeed. You're the one who's stirring up disharmony. And just going back to the whole Russia narrative, Politico ran a tweet basically saying, "Oh, Trump's exonerated," but he still divided the country. He divided the country for the last 2.5 years. It wasn't us, the media, who ran with this obviously mendacious narrative for so long just to try to smear him. And it's just misdirection because Democrats don't really have anything to offer the core voter base anymore, apart from sort of these really empty platitudes and just screaming racism at white people that say, "Well, actually, I don't really like where the country's going." A lot of people seem to be very sort of discontent with the way our countries are going. And here, as you show in the footage, it just goes to show to you that they're not coming to assimilate. There was another story from Yorkshire, and for those who don't know, Yorkshire has a lot of Pakistani communities there. Yorkshire felt the brunt of the rape gang scandals that happened in the UK over the past, well, it spans back as far as the 70s. And there were these criminals who ran away from the police and they lost control of the car, crashed into a tree, and all on board died. And they were of Muslim extraction. I can't remember if they're Pakistani or Bangladeshi. And thousands turned up to their funeral. Thousands.
Yeah.
So you have this situation where, on the one hand, the native Europeans have to sort of embrace radical individualism, but they don't apply this radical individualism to people who have recently migrated to Europe. So, of course, they're in a strange country. They're going to want to stick together even more than they did back at home.
Yeah. And it was the exactly. And of course, we have to point that out with the all the grooming gangs, right? And all the just a total mess and collapse in the UK when it comes to law enforcement and authorities of failing these young girls and women that were abused over years and years and years. And there has been a you know, kind of an uprising of sorts against this. And it's certainly kind of trickled up, you know, throughout the couple of years now. But it hasn't been that mass outrage campaign that I thought it would be. What do you make of that? Is this just going to continue, or what's the breaking point for the British people?
I honestly don't know. It seems that in the cities, places like London and Birmingham, they're just very passive about these kind of things. But in the more rural areas, people are fed up. It was the rural areas that really mostly, a lot of them voted for Brexit. They're sick of being ruled by these unaccountable Eurocrats in Brussels. And also the other thing that needs to be considered is that for just the sheer magnitude of these grooming gang scandals and the fact that the authorities had covered them up, and there were reports of people who tried to blow the lid on the grooming gang scandals, were sent on diversity courses. Some of them might have been disciplined for racism, and a lot of people who tried to, you know, try to bring the attention of the police to them would have been either arrested or they would have had their concerns downplayed. And also they try to keep the lid on the reports to prevent there from being aggravated racial tensions, implying that there's only, well, a group that is overrepresented in partaking in the grooming gangs. And yeah, it was pretty disappointing. The media, of course, didn't overplay it as they should have done. They didn't basically talk about just the sheer magnitude of the story and the fact that it wasn't just happening in Rotherham, it was happening all over the country. It was happening in quiet rural villages across the country. And the fact that a lot of people who aren't politically tuned in or don't read social media just do not know about it at all. I didn't know about it until I started looking into politics a year after the story broke.
Right. Yeah, and that's crazy, right? I don't know what's going to be the breaking point. I think, of course, Brexit has been one kind of outlet of this, even if it's kind of veiled. It's not really, you know, explicit, right? It's just like kind of, it's a discontent against the EU. It's projection on the fact that they, you know, the English people, I should say, don't like the establishment in that sense. They're turning against it. But a quick comment on Brexit, the total betrayal by the leadership. I'm not surprised. I always thought that the EU, at the very least, would give Britain a bad deal to make them, turn them into an example for other countries so that they wouldn't like be inspired and say, hey, look, that turned out great. They're liberated from the clutches of the bureaucratic super state of the European Union. They can go their own way. It was almost like a setup to begin with that, like, if they vote in the wrong way for this, we're going to punish them. And now it's going to be delayed. And the latest I saw here now is that May is offering to step down in order to get a Brexit deal passed. What have you heard about this? And what do you make of the Brexit debacle?
Yeah, well, when I saw that May was willing to step down if Brexit was passed, that sort of made me lose a lot of hope, to be honest. But first off, the day of the referendum, I didn't think that we would vote to leave. I thought that we'd stay in, and quite comprehensively. And then when I woke up and saw the results, it was a real surprise, to be honest. And then once the results came through, you just knew that they were going to stall it as long as possible. My thinking was that they're going to stall it for maybe 4 or 5 years, continue to have net immigration, because most of the net immigration into the UK is from outside of Europe. Well, a lot of net immigration is from outside of Europe. And then they'd have the sheer numbers, because a lot of the Brexit voters might have died off in that 4 to 5 year time frame. And then they would have had almost 1.5 eligible new voters for another referendum to swing the vote back in the opposite way. And of course, with 4 or 5 years of more sustained propagandizing from the mainstream media, then, you know, maybe the public conscience would have gone towards a more favorable approach towards the EU. That's just my thinking anyway, but it looks like they're trying to stall it right at the final hurdle.
Yeah, and then they're going to have some kind of an additional vote, right? The people's vote. I heard Donald Tusk talking about, I think it was just yesterday, like, oh, well, there's a million people that have signed a petition. Maybe it's even more now. And we can't ignore those voices. Wait a minute. The vote has already been done. The people have already spoken. Like, how can you retract on this? I remember the Ireland, of course, it was the same thing there. Remember, they voted. It was the big EU referendum thing, and I forget if it was the Lisbon Treaty, and then they reworked that in some capacity, right? And Ireland was the one country that could stop it. They voted on it in, I forget which year, but they essentially voted wrong, and they said no. And then they put up it to another vote a little bit later, like a couple of years, and then they voted yes.
Yeah, of course. Of course, that's the way that they're doing. And of course, if you wanted to talk about Ireland as well, they've really gone with the whole neoliberal approach, hook, line, and sinker. They've wanted to drastically increase the Irish population via immigration. And of course, it's all about maximizing profits for big corporations. As we know, Ireland is relatively a tax haven. A lot of big corporations have their headquarters there because of tax breaks. And it doesn't really stop them from paying minimal taxes on their profits anyway. But you can see this kind of happening everywhere that the people have held referenda against the EU, against the EU's interests. They either try to get them to vote again until they vote in favor of the EU, or they just repudiate the result. They just sweep it under the cover and say, well, tough titties, you're already in the EU, and they just ignore the vote. Or they'll just say something like, oh, it was just to try to gauge people's opinions rather than anything anything substantial.
It's just nuts. Absolutely crazy that they can do this with a straight face, to be honest. And on one end, I guess it's good. It just creates more and more discontent among the populace. And I would say, I would extend this same line of reasoning, at least when it comes to the anti-European sentiments, to obviously to Article 13. And I wanted to run this by you too. Let me pull up the article here, because it was not only, let me pull this one up first, because this is very interesting. Sweden Democrats and Social Democrats defeated the motion to amend Articles 11 and 13 of this copyright, well, they call it a protection, right, in the EU. But it turns out that these bozos pressed the wrong buttons. it was three of them. Thank you, Swede, today. But then he came out and he updated this article when it turns out it was 13 MEPs across the board, not only in Sweden. I refuse to believe it. I think they said they were going to vote one way, but to not get the flack and whatever from their constituents, they decided to say that, we pressed the wrong button. And supposedly you can correct the record and say, well, I intended to vote this way, but they won't actually change the outcome of the vote. That stands, even if you had all of them voting wrong.
Right. It's just all too fishy. I just do not believe in a coincidence like that. Oh, no. Well, we just pressed the wrong button. Granted, they do have a very short amount of time to vote, but we often know how ill-prepared politicians are before voting on something.
Especially in the EU, too.
Yeah, in particular. We know the EU is just it's a corrupt house of cards. I can't see it lasting more than 20 years, personally, but they're going to do everything in their power to keep it together. And, well, they need to have control of the internet. You need to have a bunch of sort of booze-addled boomer Europeans controlling the internet to keep the Eurofederalist experiment alive. Otherwise, people would just get so, so discontent with it. And as we started seeing in Germany with the partial rise of the ADF, in Sweden with the Sweden Democrats and Marine Le Pen's party, Front National, and just all across Europe, people are really beginning to feel contempt for globalism in general. And I think that this is what's going to rekindle that national fervor that's been lost over the past three generations.
Yeah, I hope you're right. It's make it or break it at this stage. I'd say demographically, we are being swamped, and within a few generations, How is it going to be like to be a resented and despised minority in our own countries? We don't have a country to flee to. We don't have a country that we can go back to. This is it. This is all we have, right? And so, sure, you can go to another country, but that's not going to be your country. It's not going to be a country of your people, of your culture, of your language, and all these kinds of things. And so they're pushing hard, I think, to just implement this as fast as possible before people wake up. But ironically, the faster and the harder they push, that also causes more people to wake up to it. So there's a we've talked about this for a few years now on the show, that it's that window that's like, it's closing and it's almost closed in terms of what how we can do, at least democratically, to vote our way out of the situation. I do have hope. I do think that there's a lot of things that could change at the end of this. I do think that trends will change. It's not going to just remain on the path that everything is on right now. But it's clear that the nationalist parties is on the rise in the Western world. And as a consequence, they have to control and shut down the ability for people to communicate this positive message of the fact that we can restore our countries, we can bring back our nationalist sentiments, we can take immigration under control, and start helping people in the countries where they come from, instead of bringing them into vastly foreign and alien cultures and try to, well, they don't even try to integrate them anymore. Now they've just given up on that. They basically just create enclaves little colonies inside the West, right?
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And this whole idea of integration has, on the wider scale, been a farce. Of course, I'm not going to take away from people who have become westernized and have integrated, but that often means sort of giving up their own traditions and cultures and practices. So most people don't want to do that. Even if the chances or the opportunity to make a better living for your families are far better in the West than they are maybe back at home or whatever, it often means integration, often means having to give up your traditions and cultures. And people rather would keep cling on to their traditions than just make more resources. And you're completely right. And you start seeing these weird rifts between certain different types of group of people who would have no contact with one another had it not been for these sort of globalist politicians who raised our borders for the flow of labor and capital. For example, do you remember the Calais jungle, that migrant camp of people desperate to get into the UK?
Yeah, certainly.
Well, they had gang fights between Eritreans and Afghans. Where else in the world would they have such proximity to have these little squabbles? It's absolutely insane. And why do our countries have to be the battlegrounds for all these conflicts that we didn't want? And there's a story in London about how mothers are sending their children back to Somalia because knife crime is too high.
Nice. Oh, God. Yeah, let me see if I can find that. I think I saw that in passing, too. Yeah, there it is. Mothers sends sons to Somalia to avoid knife crime. That's right. London is taking over some of these in terms of the violent crime. Getting ahead of some of these third world countries, which people flee from, supposedly, to get away from this violence. But, of course, as we know, you can't import people from a third world country and avoid developing into that country, because it's the people that is the primary driver of how a country turns out, whether people like that or not. That's the awful truth that we're not allowed to talk about, right? That it's not about the magical soil, that if you enter into some new area, you'll miraculously change your ways, right? And again, the absurd solution to this, that just extract, a few hundreds of thousand or even a few million from these countries and place them all around the West, and that one, that will change their ways, or that things are going to get better in that country. If these are the people that are concerned with the development of their nation and their countrymen, those are the very people that should stay and vote and do activism and start changing the country from within. Instead, they just give up on it and just leave because it's easier.
Yeah, and I don't think that this sort of petty, false paradigm left-right politics helps anyone either. I mean, in the UK, you're not really spoiled for much choice. The only two viable political parties are the Conservatives, which is just basically diluted form of Marco Rubio republicanism. And then you have sort of Tumblr with cold weather in the form of the Labour Party. Of course, there are some Labour politicians and even Conservative politicians who aren't really all that balmy, but you're not really you don't realistically have a very good choice in politicians. And going back to what we're saying, and it's not just third world migration per se. You also have groups of people from Eastern Europe, the Baltic states, and even Western Europe fighting with each other. I've heard that some forms of gang warfare across the UK. There's one in particular outside of Manchester, because I had a friend who worked as a bouncer in a club outside of Manchester, where they had gangs of Portuguese versus gangs of Poles. So
that's right, yeah. In Sweden, we have people from the Balkans. They were creating gangs and stuff, and they were fighting with each other and different Swedes. It's across the board. I think if you enter into a culture where you're not from and stuff, you become ruthless, and your tendency to be drawn to these gangs on an ethnic level is obviously even greater when you come to a foreign culture, right?
Yeah, because they offer identity and fraternity.
Yeah, that's right.
That's pretty much it. I mean, you're giving up your identity to come somewhere else, and then when somebody else offers it, it's going to be stronger. It's going to be stronger because you're at odds with the home nation's identity, and we can start seeing this happening. And at the same time, you have the authorities trying to dilute the cultures of the home nations. For example, you've seen people in certain councils across the UK and Germany advising you not to hang up the flag of your home country because it might aggravate people.
Yeah, exactly. And it's funny because it's always that. And we saw that after New Zealand too, right? Actually, people were talking with the media, and police even had said, yeah, there is a real concern that if we're not nice or do this in the right way, there will be retaliation against the New Zealand people, right? The Kiwis. So that kind of implies that, okay, so you're saying that they're a violent group then, that if they don't get what they want, they will commit violence against the whole host population that let them in. And there's no one reacting to this as like, this is outrageous. We're not, what are we? Are we being blackmailed to have to behave in a certain way and placate to violent criminals? Because that's what it means.
Exactly, exactly. And people don't really have to look far to see what the media actually implies. For example, when people like Lauren Southern, Martin Selner, and Brittany Pettibone got banned from talking in the UK, what was cited was that they didn't want a backlash from certain communities. Okay, what does that mean? If you have an IQ above room temperature, you'll know what that means. It means that certain groups will start rioting. People will start maybe making bomb threats and so on and so forth. But you can't say anything about it because you'll get shut down on social media. You won't be seriously entertained on any news program or anything like that. And we can see it across the mainstream media. I don't know if you're familiar with any of the sort of panel shows in the UK, but in the audience, they always have maybe one token sort of center-right, neoliberal kind of guy, and the rest of them are either non-British, and you get a few sort of woke, middle-class, university-educated cosmopolitans, and that's about it.
Yeah. Yeah, no diversity of opinions there, you know. It's no. Funny, too, yeah, your tweet about the swan, right? Plenty of police action around that. The police film using riot shields and loaf of bread to control rogue swan. Oh my god, it's clown world, total clown world right now. It's easy to make fun of it, and in a way we kind of need to enjoy the ride as it's going down, because I think out of the ashes something more sensible and reasonable is going to rise out, but it's not going to last, it's not going to stand. Something is going to give way, I believe. But Orwell and Goad, we're going to take a break here in just a minute or so and continue in part two and talk more about some of the breaking stories. We had an explosion in Stockholm. I want to show some of that footage. I want to talk about Joe Biden, who's again coming out ripping on white man's culture this time. He's been famous, of course, for celebrating whites becoming a minority in America. Also want to get into a little bit of Trump handing over the Golan Heights to Israel, letting them annex it and what that means and who some of the people behind that might actually be. Kushner, of course. We have his oil drilling rights of his, what was it called again? Genie Energy. That's what it's called. That's right. So a couple of these stories to get into. But hey, please tell us about your Twitter, how people can follow you. And also you write for New Media, let me pull that up here. New Media Central, you're an editor over there.
Yes, that's right. So my Twitter account is just at Orwell and Good. And I have a Facebook page which has got the same handle. I just post stuff I see on message boards, social media. I browse through a lot of publications to see what there is, see what's being said, see what founders think about to do, because I think humor is still a very, very powerful tool. Even if we live in some very depressing times socio-politically, there is some light at the end of the tunnel. If you keep putting this kind of stuff, more average people will look at it and think, well, what the hell is going on? Eventually, they won't be able to laugh off much longer. So, and I also host streams on my small YouTube channel every Wednesday and Friday, Sunday evening as well.
Yeah, that's right. Definitely make sure you check that out. Some good material there. You guys always go through. You kind of sometimes you do it yourself, I think, and sometimes you have some guests joining in, and you guys are talking about the breaking news and some of the stories. What a time to be alive. That's your latest show right now, Waking Up the West, right? That's the title of the show.
That's right. That's my Sunday show.
Okay, great. So you guys can find that on New Media Central on the right-hand side there too. But yeah, definitely make sure you follow him. If you don't already, I'm sure you already do. You have a lot of followers on Twitter, about almost 83,000 now. So a lot of good stuff. Definitely make sure you don't miss out on some of that. But yeah, we'll take a short break here. We'll be back with part two. Stay with us, Orwell and Good. Stay with us, everyone out there. We'll be right back.